Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 11th of January. Julianne Zelizer is with us this hour of the program, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, author of a number of books, one on Jimmy Carter, another on the presidency of George W. Bush, a first historical assessment. He is also the author of Arsenal of Democracy on Capitol Hill and Taxing America. He's a frequent contributor to many publications. He has writings frequently on CNN.com, Politico, The New York Times, and many other places. And he is with us to talk about the connection between political speech and the shootings in Tucson. He says in something that he wrote just yesterday, the fact that so many people instantly wondered about the connection between political speech and the shootings in Tucson suggests that something has gone wrong in the way that we debate political issues. Too much is at stake, and the risks are too high to continue with this kind of toxic political culture. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Zelizer. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Professor Zelizer, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We spent the last hour talking about this as well. It was a concern of both of our guests last hour that we would have a few days here of hand-wringing, and then it would be pretty much back to business as usual, where everybody's yelling at everybody. We don't get much legislation passed. The talk shows are screaming about the enemies, et cetera. Do you share the same concern?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you have to bet, the bet is that we will quickly return to the kind of politics we've seen in the past year, which isn't just polarized. It's not just two parties that disagree with each other. It's a kind of level of aggression and nastiness that we've seen in certain parts of the media, certain activist communities, and certain mainstream politicians that pushes the boundaries of what we thought was legitimate political discourse.
And have we seen this before in American history?
Absolutely. There's many periods where this rears its head. In the early 1960s, for example, people spoke about the radical right, which were radical conservative organizations like the John Birch Society, and they spoke, you know, viciously about proponents of civil rights legislation, about President John F. Kennedy. When Kennedy went to Dallas, Texas, before his assassination, he was greeted with conservative protesters who did things like hold up, you know, wanted signs with President Kennedy's face on it. And so there have been moments when we have gone through this before, and it's often been, you know, dangerous moments in American history.
Is there a radical left as well?
Absolutely. You know, Democrats suffered in the late 1960s when some of the grassroots organizations like the Weathermen embraced violence. And Republicans were able to use that against them to paint liberalism as far left as allowing for violent alternatives to social problems. So we've seen this on the left and the right earlier in American history. We had anarchism. We have a history of this. And the question is always, you know, how long does it take until politicians push back against these kind of political actors?
And why, Professor Zelizer, do you think that we've seen an increased level of nastiness in the past year or so?
Well, part of it is the kind of just mobilization of opponents of President Obama, and the health care bill was a very contentious issue. And whenever you put a contentious policy on the table like health care, you stimulate opponents and you give them an issue to coalesce around. Immigration, I think, is another issue which evokes very heated feelings at the local level. But on the other hand, we also have the Internet, which I think can't be discounted. It is allowing organizations who at one time would be fringe groups who most people did not see or hear to have a national platform and to reach potential members across across the country, across the world. And I think it's something, a new technology that we have to grapple with and understand its effects.
I guess I never fully understood, so help me out here, the contentiousness and the anger about healthcare reform. I do remember the town hall meetings. We saw many of them, and they were highly contentious. Congresswoman Giffords had her office smashed because of her vote on the healthcare reform. Why did that create the scene that it did?
It's hard to understand, frankly. I mean, if you look at it on paper, this was not a radical health care reform proposal.
Right.
President Obama moved far away from not just where President Truman had been in the 1940s, but where President Clinton had been in the 90s. So you have to think some of the anger is about something else. I think there are opponents of the Democratic Party who were willing to mobilize, and this gave them an issue. I'm not sure the issue itself is what angered them. It's a just kind of rebellion. It's a frustration with liberal politics, and the second is the economy. I mean, whenever you have a bad economy and high unemployment rates, you get a certain kind of frustration out there, which lends itself sometimes to an uglier form of populism where people blame almost anything for their problems, even if there's a disconnect between what they're attacking and what the reality is.
You wrote in your piece that you wrote yesterday about too much being at stake to continue with this kind of toxic political culture. What's at stake?
Well, there's two things at stake. I mean, the first is very practical. It's the potential for violence. I don't think this shooting, from what we know so far, was an act of political, a politically motivated act. Or it's someone who is psychologically very disturbed and might have done this regardless of the political environment. But we had an environment where people thought violence was possible. This is not something new. The New York Times has a remarkable article about Giffords' district in Arizona and just how contentious it had become with acts of vandalism against her office and constant threats from conservative activists. So you have practical things that are at stake, meaning attacks on people and murder. And the second is just it's a dysfunctional political culture. We can't compromise if both sides see the other as villains and enemies.
Mm-hmm.
How do you ever compromise with people if that's who you're dealing with?
How do you rate the reactions so far this week in Congress? They've decided not to debate contentious health care reform repeal. John Boehner has had some poignant things to say, the president, of course, as well, from different political parties. Will this continue? Do you think they're sitting down to have heartfelt discussions about how should we proceed from here?
No, I mean, I think, look, both parties are aware that they have to deal with there's two different things. One is they both have to deal with extremist elements, and clearly the Republicans have been talking about this, and they're going to have to distance themselves from some of these fringe Tea Party organizations because this is not something that they could politically afford to have these kinds of associations made. But at the same time, the tensions over issues like healthcare don't go away. So I think this is just a temporary break. The Republicans are going to return to their opposition for calling for repeal, and Democrats are going to get ready to push the implementation of this bill. I don't think this break will last very long. I think, the Republicans are being very careful right now, and members of Congress are, rightfully shocked at what happened, and I think many are scared.
Mm-hmm. We welcome phone calls. We have tons of people who want to talk about this issue, as we did last hour. Our lines are filled again this hour. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and Julian Zelizar is our guest this hour. We're lucky enough to have him fairly regularly on this show, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, author of a number of books, including most recently The Presidency of George W. Bush, A First Historical Assessment. Lynn from Eau Claire, our first caller. Hi, Lynn.
Oh, hi, Kathleen. I think that at this time, the charge of those people who are aware that things have to change, and change is slow, but if we persevere steady, this event could be an opportunity to teach those coming up behind us to practice the three R's of general discourse, which is very, very hard to do, restraint, respect, and responsibility. And I don't think either one of those things, there's nothing more important than the other one in dealing with other human beings.
Professor?
Yeah, I think that's true. And it's important in dealing with other human beings, and at a different level, it's important in politics. The vilification of each party, I think, has been very damaging, and you wonder why the parties are so polarized. You know, the hope is that you take a horrible moment like this and at a minimum use it to change the direction of political debate. It doesn't mean Democrats and Republicans have to agree on anything, but it does mean that they have to talk about each other differently in certain types of campaign tactics and certain kinds of rhetoric that we've seen from mainstream politicians like Sarah Palin has to go away. And I think both parties should really enter into a discussion about this and an effort to tone things down.
Mm-hmm. I am surprised because knowing she's wildly popular in this country among some people, that she hasn't come forward to just from the heart say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about the crosshair thing. I'm sorry about that. I'm deeply moved by this. She doesn't just come on television and say that from the heart. I think people would respect that.
Oh, I agree completely. I mean, there were different reactions. Initially, some Republicans, like Speaker Boehner, were very forthcoming
yes,
and condemned
he was.
This and said
mm-hmm.
how horrible it was and that it has no place in American politics. Even Roger Ailes of Fox News told people to tone it down at his station.
I think he told them to shut up.
To shut up, tone
right.
it down. At the same time, in the last day, there's been a series of columns, a kind of defensive posture, including mm-hmm. comments by Palin, saying, you know, that liberals are making an issue of this, and this isn't a product of conservatism. It's a product of a deranged individual. But kind of focusing on themselves and on the conservative movement seems like the wrong approach. I think what would be more effective is, as you said, for Palin to come out and express genuine disgust and frustration and disappointment with what happened in Arizona. That seems to be the point, not mounting a defense of conservative politics right now.
Yeah. It seems to me as though you have to honor Congresswoman Giffords, and so much of what she was saying was an attempt to call people from different political persuasions together to be civil to each other, that what she has almost died for and others did die for was you have to honor that. This you got to be civil. You got to listen to her at this point. She's the one you have to listen to.
Look, she's one of the moderates. She was one of the moderates in the Democratic Party, Democrat from a conservative area, who really did believe in trying to build coalitions in a period where bipartisanship has almost vanished. So her message while before this happened, I think, is very relevant. And it's I'm sure, something she'd be committed to if she's able to return to office.
Right, yeah. Thanks, Lynn, for the call. Mike in Minneapolis, hi.
Hi, good afternoon or morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, listening to this, I'm typically in Minneapolis and listen to the talk radio stations in there. I'm passing through Wisconsin, so I hear your discussion today. It's interesting to hear all the different perspectives. Thing that just popped in my mind a second ago was that this a representative, you know, it's an interesting time. It's around Martin Luther King time. And that's a lot of the things that Martin Luther King stood for, was for people to be, you know, for equality. And so I have a lot of respect for her and what she stood for, but I also am very appalled, actually, to hear so much of this be put upon the conservatives' heads. This morning it was confirmed that the shooter was a registered independent. So I don't know, you know, why they keep toning it towards the conservatives. I do understand some of the political rhetoric. The political rhetoric is unfortunate, but it has been there from the beginning of time, from the times of monarchies, you know, even back into, you know, the Stone Ages. We've always had this. I mean, look at the assassination of President Lincoln. But I don't think it should be changed. It's unfortunate that you have lunatics like this shooter in Arizona, but if we try too hard to silence it, we may end up like the monarchies, where the people no longer can speak out, and we're controlled by those that have all the power. This is why we have a democracy, and it's so important. And, of course, you know, you can hear my tone of voice. I do lean more right, but I'm not ultra-conservative, as most would consider. But I think that, you know, the Internet should not be regulated. Rhetoric should be regulated. It just shouldn't be illegal. I don't think anybody has the right to scream fire in a crowded theater, you know, but I also don't agree that, you know, nothing should be allowed to be spoken. But I would like to say for the record that, you know, President Obama, I don't agree with him. I even may consider myself somewhat of a birther, and I may even want him impeached, but I tell you, he is my president, and I would die for him. If somebody were to try to, you know, try an assassination attempt, I would put myself in front of that bullet because he is my president, and he stands for the red, white, and blue, and that's just how I feel. Outside of I don't agree with him, and I am more of a Beck fan. Sorry to say that, but and I do appreciate you guys talking about this. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, thanks very much for the call, Professor.
I think first no one's some people might be, but I don't think most people are calling for a regulation of speech. And I think most people agree. From what we know, it's not right to blame Sarah Palin, for example, for this shooting. Somehow drawing a dot from what she says to what he did. But at the same time, we can't ignore some of the tactics that went way beyond speech. Congresswoman Giffords, her office was vandalized. She had been repeatedly threatened since the summer of the town hall meetings. When her father was asked if she had any enemies when she was on her way to the hospital, he said the entire Tea Party.
Mm-hmm.
And she had been very worried and cognizant of the physical threats that she faced as a result of the health care vote and as a result of immigration politics in the state of Arizona. The threat of violence is very different than even just, you know, good old-fashioned partisanship. And we need to separate the two. And I think Republicans and Democrats should be very firm that they don't accept that kind of talk and won't associate with people who are doing this. When the vandalism took place and the spike in threats to members of Congress has taken place over the past year, many members of Congress were quite silent about this. And I think, you know, this is the reason people are drawing some kind of connection between these two.
And, you know, this climate, I mentioned this last hour, too. The federal judge who was murdered received death threats, and his family did, after a radio station went after him because of this civil rights lawsuit that he was going to proceed with against the state's immigration law. I mean, death threats for that?
Right. Yes. And there's nothing kind of in the history of this country that suggests we should tolerate death threats. And you had advertisements with candidates brandishing guns and kind of making statements, again, which were not intended to cause harm, but to, you know, lock and load and,
right.
You know, just going in places that can be dangerous, that could inspire dangerous people to do dangerous things. And there's no need for that. And again, this is not about partisanship. You can be a full partisan without threatening a member of Congress.
Julian Zelizer, our guest. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, Nancy Pearl will be joining us. She was recently named Librarian of the Year, and we'll be talking about books for 2011 with Nancy, one of our favorite people. Our next caller is Rich from Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Hi. What we have separated in this country is the powerful from the powerless. And I'll set aside the question of Mr. Loeffner, who is a tragic figure, clearly abandoned by a system that would not see to his mental health or his reintegration into society. He certainly felt powerless, of that I'm sure. In the United States of America today, the people, the right of the people to peaceably assemble and petition their government has been abridged. One need look no further than prior to the Republican convention in the Twin Cities, the St. Paul police conducted preemptive raids. We established free speech zones for protesters, which are not free speech at all. They are apartheid. And one can look at what recently happened in the UK to Prince Charles and the Duchess of Cornwall, Camille Parker Bowles. Their limousine was attacked by students protesting tuition hikes in the UK, and paint was spilled, epithets were shouted, Tory scum, down with the monarchy. No one in our culture can get that close to the corridors of power under how we now interpret the Constitution. Our Supreme Court has said, if you have more money, you have more speech. So I fear we're going to dumb down the idea of civility into people must shut up even more about what is wrong in our nation.
Professor Zelizer.
There's a lot of issues that the caller's raising. The first, I would be uncomfortable talking about how the shooter being disempowered somehow is the reason why he did this. This is, a deranged individual who's committed murder. And I don't think we should ascribe powerlessness as the reason, or even some would say as some kind of justification for that. And the kind of issue of political participation, mobilization, many people on the left and the right complain there's not enough opportunities, to participate in the political process. And sure, that's a legitimate debate to have. In terms of campaign finance and how interest groups work and the new kinds of post 9/11 restrictions there are at campaigns, but that has nothing to do with this shooting. And again, people talking about toning down and distancing and stopping threats, violent threats, is very different than telling people not to engage in political protests. We're talking about violent physical threats to members of Congress. And there's just no rationale for allowing that to happen.
And thanks very much for the call. Let's spend a few moments talking about the press, as we did last hour in this. Matt Taibbi had an interesting piece in Rolling Stone, and we talked to him about Griftopia recently. And he says, he watched Fox and he watched some other media outlets, and he was seeing one pundit after another point out that Jared Loughner was probably a schizophrenic, a statistical aberration, and that no wider conclusions can or should be drawn by the actions of one lone nutcase. We can already see that he acted alone. Defense is going to be widely employed. He says that we in the media understand that our job descriptions do not entirely overlap with the requirements of good citizenship. If you're in a marriage or a parent or living with parents or have brothers and sisters, when you argue over a difficult issue, you don't just take out all the weaponry in your arsenal and blast away. In the interest of preserving the relationship and because you respect and love the other person, you argue as politely and respectfully as possible. It is not the case in journalism. And it's partially because of the money that's involved here. You can make vast fortunes, he says, riling up mobs.
I think he has a point. The new media, meaning the internet kind of 24-hour media, it creates incentives for guests who go on the shows and for the hosts of the shows to get ratings, to attract eyeballs and viewers by saying outlandish things.
Yes.
And by replicating, worldwide wrestling rather than at least how we have an image of what political debate should be. More people will tune in to something dramatic and inflammatory, and that's a problem. And the new media also just allows anyone to get their message out. And obviously there's great things about that. It's a democratic medium, but dangers come with that. And if you're talking about, violent groups espousing, hatred and targeting people, we have to contend with that at the same time that we have to preserve the kind of free speech that the new media offers. But in terms of kind of cable television and talk radio and internet newspapers, I do think, there's been a premium placed on who can rile people up on the left and the right.
And we're moving away from a kind of journalism which had a real value, where that wasn't the style of reporting. You at least tried to be as objective as possible and avoid having the hosts be open partisans.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Rich. Thanks for the call. Our next caller is Naomi in Dubuque. Hi, Naomi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple points. The first thing is that, you know, I keep hearing people talk about how it seems like the right is getting more right and the left is getting more left. And from where I stand, you know, listening to public radio and talking to just regular people in my community and people that I know, I would disagree with that. I mean, it seems to me like most people are reasonable, fairly moderate people who just want what's best for the country and, you know, aren't concerned about winning or losing or who's right or who's wrong. Like, let's just find a solution and, you know, and are moderate, reasonable people. So I think because the people, especially the on the far right, are so in the spotlight and so obnoxious. I mean, the Glenn Becks and the Sean Hannitys and the Rush Limbaughs, you know, it appears that the right is getting so much more right, but I think we need to look at the reality of how many people, you know, most people I think are fairly moderate. And the second point that I wanted to make was that, you know, again, not, I don't want to vilify the right because I don't think that, you know, Sarah Palin was the direct cause of this, you know, crazy man with the killing. But it's kind of a wake up call. I think we need to stop and look at the words that we're using and look at what kind of environment we're creating. And we keep talking about how both sides of the party or both sides of the political spectrum are using this violent rhetoric. And it, I mean, if we're being honest, somebody needs to say that it's not, I don't hear the left using this violent rhetoric and inciting violence or just using the violent words. I mean, I know that the media needs to try to be balanced, and so they keep saying, you know, oh, both sides of the fence are doing this. But from my point of view, it's the right that's using this kind of language.
The disconnect between the public and political leaders and activists is something a lot of political scientists have looked at, and it's absolutely true. You know, when you poll most Americans on all the key issues, the whole idea of a nation starkly divided between red and blue doesn't work. That people are all over the place. Mm-hmm. Depending on what you ask them, they can see the center on any issue. And what we have is, for various reasons, from things like gerrymandered districts where legislators have to focus on primaries where activists tend to come out rather than, you know, moderate voters, to the internet, that politicians play to the extremes in the political system. And so it creates a system where things are very polarized if you're watching television or listening to the radio, watching what's going on in Washington, or you listen to organizations that kind of gather people for rallies, but that's not where most of the population is. And that leads to some of the frustration we have in American politics. And again, in terms of the danger of where this can go, a lot of people are talking about Kennedy's assassination in the last few days, and they've been pointing out that even though you had all these right-wing groups who were very violent, that Lee Harvey Oswald was not actually tied to them. He's not a segregationist KKK person, and they say that's the danger of kind of connecting these two things. But they forget that in the early 60s, there were many murders of civil rights activists by yes. people aligned to white supremacist groups who were feeding on this kind of issue. So the connection can actually happen. It has in American history.
Yeah.
So I think both points are important.
Here are a couple things. We've had a couple emails on this, so I will read them. Patricia says, Obama's boot on the neck of BP remark last year epitomized his ability for incendiary rhetoric. And we had a couple emails referencing this remark from the president. If they bring a knife to the fight, we bring a gun.
Yeah. Okay. Again, that's different than throwing a rock through a congressperson's
through a congressperson's window or saying on an ad that, you know, they're going to target their opponent holding a gun. I do think we have to recognize the difference between, you know, violent threats and dangerous rhetoric and kind of standard, you know, baseball analogies or cowboy analogies that we hear all the time in politics. The boot on the neck, I just don't think is the equivalent of the kind of stuff that we're talking about. This should be common sense. I mean, I think, you know, the puzzle of what's okay and what's not is being made to be much greater than I think most Americans feel. And they understand what legitimate and illegitimate is.
Naomi, thanks for your call. Tim and Ladysmith, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I guess following up on your guest's last comment, and perhaps we should not really be having this conversation to begin with. I find this so disingenuous by the left. The left likes to sit there and act like they're we don't partake in such things, but this happens on the left all the time. The very idea to try to tie conservatives to this tragic event is just offensive in every form. It's nothing more than politicizing, and unfortunately, I think the fact we're having this conversation is a shameful thing because it takes away from the fact that these people were murdered, and it makes politics out of this. We could use the same argument, which has been made for years, that television, violent video games, rock music that incites violence, maybe we should start banning those things. This is just absolutely absurd. And it's just nothing more than the left trying to score political points. And that's all it is. It's nonsense. And frankly, I think you should be ashamed of yourselves.
You know, I don't think that it is that. I think that this is an enormous event that's happened that, you know, it has political conversation to it because of the kind of heated rhetoric that's been around that many people say has spiked in the last couple of years. It has a political aspect because this was a member of Congress, because a federal judge was murdered, because this member of Congress was meeting her constituents in Arizona, because her office had been vandalized last year, because she was concerned about the rhetoric and reached out to Republicans who were friends of hers, who said that we need to have more civil conversation, that she, the one who is now in a coma in Tucson, Arizona, asked for us to be more civil to each other. That's, of course, there are political elements to this, but she asked for that, and I think we're having this conversation to figure out if there's a better way for us. This shouldn't happen.
Okay, can I respond to that?
Yeah.
The left acts like this is just an anomaly that happens, and they like to pin this on the right. Like, I just heard a caller say, well, I only hear this from the right. I don't know what she reads, because the left has been doing this for years. If you read Michelle Malkin's book, The Left Gone Wild, Liberals Unhinged, the amazing abuse by leftists were it just unprecedented, the rudeness and trying to run people down with cars on the sidewalk at political polling places. None of this is ever reported.
Yeah, this is not a left-right debate. Is the left as bad as the right on this? I think that we're trying to come, you know, the theme of the last couple hours is we got to do better than this. There's got to be a better way for us. This can't happen. It's just sickening that this happens. It seems to me as though there is a natural inclination because people feel more comfortable if they go to the left with their ideas or go to their right. But I think what this is telling us is that we got to find a better way. Professor Zelizer, chime in.
No, I totally agree. I think it's natural you're going to have conversations about what happened. It's natural if you've seen a kind of very serious and substantial spike in the last 2 years in death threats and physical threats against members of Congress, and one is shot, as well as a judge, that you're going to kind of talk about the connections. There's nothing wrong with that.
And the point is, some, look, there are some who want to score political points. I'm sure that's true. But I think a majority want to make sure this doesn't happen again, and at least figure out a way to diminish the chances of that happening. And there have been many critics and fair criticism that the left or parts of the left also have gone too far in vilifying opponents. There are many who said that about during the Bush administration, you know, that there was a difference between opposing President Bush's policies and not liking him as a president and, you know, kind of creating a villain in the public mind of him and the people who surrounded him. And you heard that all the time. It was reported. And so the point is, can we have debates, vigorous debates, without resorting to that? But at a minimum, we can have vigorous debates without threatening the politicians in both parties who, you know, devote their at least part of their life to public service. And this
right.
is something that's just unconscionable.
And naturally, there would be a political element because, you know, in his crazed mind, it became political because he tried to assassinate a member of Congress and he killed a congressional staffer. So even though he may not have had a reason of I hate health care or whatever, he chose a member of government. And so you have to have the political discussion.
Absolutely. And an investigation to follow. But when a member of the White House or Congress or the judicial branch is targeted and attacked, you know, I don't see how you can avoid these kinds of discussions and questions from emerging.
We go to John in Beaver Dam. Hi, John.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that this is not a left issue or a right issue. I think that it's just a common, basic human issue. I work as a photographer and a writer, and during the last presidential cycle, I was concerned about the tone of our national dialogue. And I decided to start a documentary project called A Piece of My Mind, where I simply asked people what peace means to them and how they work towards it in their lives and some of the obstacles they encounter. Because I think that too often we're asked to look at the things that separate us in life, and if we spent a little bit more time looking at the common humanity that connected us, I think that we would be well served. And I've got one other point that I don't think we give ourselves enough credit, and we tend to feel powerless to change the tone in this sort of situation. We look to our leaders and our celebrities to do that for us and make a difference. But the truth is that we all have a tremendous amount of power in our own lives to control the way we respond to people and the way we react to some of these more violent situations.
Professor
Zell. Well, look, at a most basic level, Americans have the right to vote or not vote for politicians who engage or tolerate this kind of political activity. Again, not the shooter, but the political activity that has led some to question if there was a connection. And if Americans kind of don't, you know, keep a vigilant eye on politicians, if they tune in to the shows that are more inflammatory and focus on this kind of rhetoric, then they are participating in the process. The caller is absolutely right. I mean, we can't just look to leaders. We have to hold politicians and political organizers accountable. And when things are happening that are not acceptable, you know, it's incumbent on people, voters, average voters, to say something, to do something, to use their vote, to use their money to push for alternatives.
Thanks for the call. Richard in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Kathleen, you're exactly right. This is a political issue, and it just seems as clear as day to me that this is a result of the political social wedge issues, the discussion of conservative Republicans trying to inject, you know, froth into the political discourse. And, you know, no Republican is going to get elected on state tax cuts and capital gains tax cuts. They need to find issues that are going to bring people out to the polls. And so they bring up guns, and you know, in 2004 it was the guns and the gays, but lately it's been the health care. And, you know, terms like ramming it down their throat, it creates this froth. I mean, it even gets my little 60-year-old mother-in-law out to the polls. And of course, when Sharon Angle and Michelle Bachmann say things like we need to investigate un-American activities, that's a shot over the bow to, you know, most of these people who come to the polls to vote Republicans. But there are a few people, and they are going to be mentally deranged people, who see this as a shot into their iron sides. And this is what you get. You get people, and Republicans are pointing out he's an independent. Well, of course he was an independent. That's who the Republicans are trying to get to come to the polls. This person is the person that some of this speech was directed at. This is the kind of anger they want. They want it. Obviously, they want votes. They don't. Sharon Angle didn't mean for anybody to be shot when she said she wants a Second Amendment, you know, solution. I mean, that's ridiculous. Nobody advocates murder, but they want froth, and this is what you're going to get. And I think they should be held responsible for that kind of speech. I think the caller the last hour from the UK who had that out-of-country perspective was exactly right. We have no real debate, and that's why you get this kind of stuff. We need to find a way to get back to common sense political debate where more people can have a voice.
Professor Zelizer.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Republicans just harm themselves, that they've harmed themselves over the past year by engaging in this kind of political rhetoric. I mean, I think the Republicans actually had a big opportunity, they still do, to have a debate on economic issues, on the role of government, on, you know, what should the government do or not do about health care or even immigration and what our immigration policies should be. But when they allow kind of fringe elements to crowd the airwaves and to even be part of what conservatism is, to mainstream America, they damage themselves. They kind of put themselves in the position that Barry Goldwater faced in 1964. A senator from Arizona who ran against Lyndon Johnson was just devastated in the election because Johnson tied him to the right-wing fringe elements who were lurking in the conservative party, and Goldwater had not done enough to really separate himself, and had made statements which were not meant to be dangerous, but played to some of these elements. And so parties actually suffer. I don't think it's simply something that benefits them over the long run. So I actually think even the response in the last day, this kind of defensiveness and defense of conservatism is actually the wrong approach for the GOP. They should focus on condemning what happened and condemning any groups that might incite future violence like this.
As John Boehner did.
I think he had his initial instinct was right on target.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's not a surprise. He's a veteran politician. And he's also not a Republican who is particularly enamored with some of the fringe elements in the party. He's more almost an old-fashioned Midwestern Republican who's really interested in fiscal issues. And so, yeah, I think his response was what should be the kind of constant refrain from the GOP and from Democrats right now.
Julian Zelizer is our guest this hour. He is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, author of The Presidency of George W. Bush, A First Historical Assessment. He has also written about Jimmy Carter and has written several other history books. We're talking about doing better this hour of the program, as we did last hour, and taking more calls. One line open, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to Leslie now from Preston, Minnesota. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Kathleen. Boy, this sure can get your blood pressure up, this conversation. But to me, it just seems, growing up in the Midwest, not particularly religious or political, but I came from a very functional family. It just seems so totally common sense. Totally common sense to understand that we need just reasonable discussion. None of this big name calling and getting everybody whooped up. But there's two things. People are either followers or leaders, it seems like, and the leaders know just what to do to whoop up the followers. But what I don't understand is a lot of the things that get people most irritated with can be pointed toward the government. So to me, it just seems common sense that the government take a look at itself, the Congress take a look at itself and say, hey, we have all these people that are just getting so frustrated. We're supposed to be representing them. We obviously aren't. So if they would just say something like, okay, we're going to cut back on our retirement plan. We're going to cut back on our benefits. We're going to give back to the people a little bit. We've gone a little too far overboard. Do something to make the feel, to make the masses feel like they're getting some satisfaction with their disgust with every political person who doesn't pay their taxes. It's just so common sense that people are frustrated with people that don't do right in the government.
Well, I mean, I think it's important to note and to just make clear, while that is a very kind of valid and widespread argument, this shooting, you know, this is not a shooter whose actions we could have prevented if he had a vote that he could have made or he had more access to politicians in other ways. So it doesn't really help us stop this particular case. And in terms of, you know, the violent activity that we have seen in the past few years, again, it's hard to know whether this would help, you know, whether, you know, Congress reforming itself, changing the campaign finance system, would that stop some of the kind of people who have threatened members of Congress? They might have done that either way. But in general, the point is absolutely true. The better government works, the better we can deal with the economy and lower unemployment, the happier people will be and fewer people will be interested in this kind of politics. So that is one of the best ways to obviously diminish some of the heat that we see in our political system.
Pat in Brookfield, hi.
Hey, guys. What I'm looking at as a conservative is just a slice of fairness in this debate, and the majority of the callers, and from what I'm hearing from your guests, it's keeping up the exact same drumbeat, you know, that we heard from the mass media and the left before the blood even dried. Before the blood even dried on this situation, I would ask some folks to go on to MoveOn.org right now, to go on to Media Matters, the Huffington Post, take a look at the programming from 6 to 9 o'clock on MSNBC. And you want to see some real vitriol, that's where the vitriol is coming right now. Of course, conservatives are going to get pushed back. We are being blamed for the murder of 9 people. For before the facts even came out, if we look at this individual killer, he was known, he was anti-war, he was an atheist, he had other issues with this individual starting in 2007 before Sarah Palin, or the Tea Party. He's a registered independent. If this person is political at all, he's probably right down the middle.
Professor Zelizer.
Again, I don't think everyone is. I certainly am not trying to blame conservatism for this shooting. And I'm talking in this conversation about certain segments of the conservative movement, small, very small segments that have been involved in the past few years in a more threatening and aggressive kind of politics. By no means does this represent most Republicans or most conservatives. That would be a terrible mistake to say. And I think in some ways that's why the burden is very great on the GOP to distance themselves rather than making these moments a defense of conservatism, to do what John Boehner said and focus on what happened and avoiding it in the future. And it's true that on the left, there is, I mean, there hasn't been at least documented the same number of kind of, you know, threats, of violent threats against members of Congress. Most of that came from the Tea Party. But there certainly is, rhetoric that I think is just destructive and talks about Republicans as villains and enemies rather than as opponents. And I think that's fine. But when you cross the line, you again create a dysfunctional political culture.
I go back to Congresswoman Giffords' brother-in-law who made the comment from space, and I understand you see things quite differently when you're in space, but looking at the beauty and the peacefulness of this planet, what a perspective to put this tragedy in a different perspective. And I think that he said the crux of all of this, we are better than this, we must do better than this, and that requires you know, oh, the left is blaming conservatives. The conservatives, we need to blame the left. We need to all do some soul searching here. I'm not sure what the answers are to this, but this was a horrendous tragedy in our country, and we can do better than this. And for people to retreat and go back into their right or left circles is not what is called for from us, I think.
I agree. And, you know, the good news is that moments of, you know, extreme political activity, extremist political activity have often, you know, then turned into moments where there is collective action on the nation's mm-hmm. problem, where those mm-hmm. elements are not central to the party, and then, you know, political parties move to the center. So we can have this. There are kind of cycles that we go through. The hardest part is because I think of the internet. I really think it's a big factor. It's hard to stop this. But at least at a minimum, whether you're calling into a talk show or on a talk show, I think the burden is on all of us to avoid instantly making this a discussion simply about who's to blame, which
right.
party's to blame,
right.
and how can we solve this, and how can we stop some of the factors that create a dangerous environment that might
yeah.
not have motivated this guy,
mm-hmm.
probably didn't, but still can motivate someone else. Again,
yeah.
Lee Harvey Oswald is not part of the Republican right, but many members of white supremacist groups did assassinate civil rights activists, and we can't have that happen again.
Professor Zelizer, always a great pleasure to have you with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Professor Julian Zelizer, Professor of History and Public Affairs at Princeton University. Thanks to Christy Pease for producing the hour, to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production. Thanks for your calls, everyone.